Hi, it's Garen with Shamrock Roofing and Construction. Need a new roof fast? Consider Shamrock Roofing and Construction. Our rapid repair team will get you a quote within 24 hours and will always repair before we replace. One call does it all. ShamrockRoofer.com.
See them tumbling down. To the ground.
Way out west, there was this fella I want to tell you about. Fella by the name of
Todd Lebo.
At least that was the handle his loving parents gave him. And he never had much use for it himself.
This Lebo.
He called himself
Lebo.
Sometimes there's a man. He's the man for his time and place. He fits right in there. And that's
Todd Lebo.
Kansas City.
I hate Lebo.
La 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 la.
You know, Beards made a point there as the intro is playing. For once, Todd Lebo is way out west.
I am.
The one and only Todd Lebo. Live some. You're technically in surprise right now, right?
Correct. I'm in surprise, and I'm outdoors, and I don't see any tumbleweeds going by like there are in that intro to the Big Lebowski. But I am way out west. No question about that.
You're way out west in a beautiful place to be at a beautiful time of year out there in Surprise, Arizona. If you're just joining us and going, who the hell, where is Jason? Jason's out today. We've got him literally day to day on the injury report. Thoughts and prayers
literally.
There. Literally day to day. Josh Briscoe, Beards McFly with you here in studio. But Lebo in Arizona for spring training. How's it been out there so far, Lebo? You enjoying the sun?
Oh, you know I love the sun.
I know you're a big sun guy.
I have my big bucket hat. I've worn long pants every day and long sleeve shirts and put 70 SPF on my hands and any exposed skin.
Good.
That's what I do.
Good.
I'm standing in the shade right now, so that's what I do.
Oh, we're getting standing energy for this segment, though. You are on your feet right now?
Always on my feet for you,
man. All
always
right.
On my feet.
Beards, you got it. Can you move the camera for me? I'm gonna
stand up.
I'm standing up in studio also in solidarity. Beards, I'd really appreciate it if you would also stand after you finish fixing the camera for me. We're gonna be on 6 feet worth of standing energy. Beards is still seating.
I'll tell you what, I have both feet on the ground.
All right, so me and Lebo are going to stand, and Beards can do whatever he needs to do to make sure we stay on the air. We'll get to the news of the day here in just a second, but genuinely, what have the first couple of days out there been like so far to have a little baseball back in our lives?
Well, it's pretty cool. You know, I mean, I haven't been out in 3 years, right, ever since the month right before the pandemic hit. And that was all brand new and fresh as well, because Mike Matheny had just taken the job. And now here we are 3 years later, and Matty Quatraro has just taken the job. So it's kind of like what is old is new again or whatever. But there's certainly we've talked to a lot of people, and you'll hear a lot of these interviews on with Seren and just chit-chatting around with some of these guys. I'm blown away, Josh, by just how smart and intuitive these guys are who they've hired. You know, Brian Sweeney, the new pitching coach, Matt Quatraro, the manager. I'm not saying the other guys weren't, but this is kind of feels like new baseball.
Yeah.
You know, not old school baseball. So it's different. This is definitely a different feel. I think we've kind of gone through in the last, 8 years or whatever. I mean, the Royals with Dayton Moore and Ned Yost were very kind of old school. I mean, you know, people talk about analytics and whatever, data shifting, blah, blah, blah. Not that they were totally resistant to it, although I think Ned was resistant to it. Mm-hmm. Listen, they won a World Series and went to two. But he used to joke, he would say, yeah, they gave me a lineup. The data people give me a lineup every day, and then he fills his lineup out. What's Alcides Escobar first? And then Mike Matheny was really kind of like an old school guy, but trying to be new school.
Yeah.
And I think what they have now is some true believers. And I think a lot of people try to pigeonhole J.J. Piccolo as just Dayton Moore's guy because he was with him. But I think they're very different people. And I think it's a little different way to look at baseball. And this has been a sea change. And it'll be interesting to see if it works, right? But I think there's reason to be excited about the future of the franchise. That's what I'll say.
There's at least one really obvious like answer on the front end here that I'll just offer this one for free. But in terms of that excitement making its way from surprise back here to Kansas City, where right now I feel like spring training kind of snuck up on us. I feel like the excitement levels around here right now are not about baseball in any particular shape or form. Now, obviously, again, the obvious answer is that football season goes through February now and it never really ends in Kansas City. The Big 12 is outrageous, and we are not even to tournament time yet, so obviously basketball owns the next phase of our calendar. But do you think that there is a sort of a deflation among Royals fans that they're going to have to kind of win back over again? Is it just a matter of where the calendar is at? How are you kind of witnessing that now with you actually getting to be there where it is happening at the moment?
Well, they're all in out here, no question.
Sure.
But what you're talking about is the community, and I think there's a big wait-and-see attitude with this community. And I've said this a dozen times. I don't really feel bad for billionaires, right, especially ones that have enough money to have $1 billion and go buy a baseball team,
right,
which John Sherman did. But you got a little empathy for a guy who his life was to own a Major League Baseball team, his dream. He made enough money to do it, and then the world shut down.
Yep.
And then, okay, all right, after that, hey, your baseball partner is taking off many of the streaming and cable places that people like to watch him.
Yeah.
And, okay, you can't have any fans at the park. And, hey, let's have a work stoppage. Let's do that too, okay?
Yeah.
So it has not been easy for them, and I think the community has felt that. I mean, you know, how many people did you hear complain that were like YouTube TV subscribers who couldn't watch Royals games last year? Early on there were some complaints, but it did not take long to shift gears and move to another part of their lives. So I think there's definitely some winning over, and they're in the meantime they're trying to build support to build a baseball stadium downtown.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on with this franchise right now, no question about that. And I do think this city loves the Royals. I think this city wants good things for the Royals, but you know, we don't have 20 million people here to divide the whole thing up.
Right.
And right now, you know, someone on the Chiefs, stubs their toe. It's the biggest thing in the world. And the Royals need to earn it back. But I remember, man, when the Royals got good in, the end of 13 and obviously 14 and 15, I mean, the Chiefs were I mean, Andy Reid was the coach of the Chiefs. You know, they made the playoffs. And in 2015, the day the Royals won the World Series, they were over playing a game at 8 in the morning in London, and I don't think for about a month there anyone gave a rip about the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So if you win, you will get the attention of this city. I know that.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the stadium thing, and we haven't played in any of the clips back of it, but I had a chance to listen to a good chunk of John Sherman's conversation. Of course, there's been a lot more baseball going on in the program because Sherman's down there and can talk to a lot of those people. Started yesterday, continues today, starting at 2. But was there anything so far that's been new to you on the stadium front or even just sort of the Cliff's Notes versions of what you found interesting so far with what we heard from Sherman?
Well, I don't think I had heard him say before the really complicated nature of separating from the Chiefs in the lease before it's over, okay? Because there's a lot of things in there to keep these teams together. And then I don't think I'd really heard him say before yesterday that it very well could be that they will have separate leases, and that makes more sense. I mean, they're separate stadiums now, but they're in the same area, so that's where they're on the same lease.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things. I just want us to all keep our eyes on the relationship between these two franchises who have been tied together with these leases at the stadium since 1972 or whatever. Because I'm going to tell you something. There's no such thing as an easy divorce,
right?
Or a breakup or whatever. And I think the devil will be in the details on all of these things, on how they'll get out, who gets what, where it goes. I mean, there's so many things that they need to figure out on infrastructure and all that. Besides just, hey, we want to build some retail and some housing and a ballpark. That's easy to do, but you want to get people to be able to get there. That could be state, federal money. I mean, all kinds of things especially where they're looking at going downtown, especially on that East Village part. Listen, we had you had some issues getting around downtown for the parade, okay?
Yeah, I sure
we
did.
We need to go over those.
I sure
now,
did.
Now, there's a whole lot less people will be at a baseball game
right.
than that.
And hopefully
many of the people will already be there.
Have some walkways.
Well, they hope they'll already be there. I mean, they want to have people who are Josh Briscoe's age who live downtown and love baseball.
Sure, yeah.
And walk to the game from one light, you know?
Yep.
I don't know if that that's another thing entirely. That's a different can of fish, as Danny Clayskill would say. Kettle of fish, he would say, to get them interested in baseball. But there's a lot happening here. And, I mean, listen, John Sherman's a smart guy. He's smart in business. And this is going to be a business thing going on here.
Yeah.
This is the business part of it on the stadium and all the stuff with the government and all those things.
Well, let's talk about some of the baseball then. We mentioned a little earlier that the news today from Matt Cutrero is that outfielder Drew Waters has a left oblique strain, will be out for 6 weeks. There's a lot more going on in terms of what the rest of that center field job and that competition might look like. I know you are there for all that. So anything you need to set up before we hear what Matt Cutrero had to say about it?
Well, let's just go ahead and play it. You know, yesterday he told us that there was a bit of an oblique with Drew Waters that a couple of days before, I guess he didn't say if it was a strain or a tweak yesterday, but today he filled us in on the details.
So Drew is left oblique strain, going to be shut down from activity, approximate return about 6 weeks. And what that does to the competition just gives a lot more at-bats to other guys to spread around in the spring. And I think that's one thing that JJ's done a good job of, putting together some versatile guys, so infielders that can bounce to the outfield as well as guys that can play multiple positions in the outfield.
Is Kyle Isbell kind of the leading candidate for the starting center field job? I don't know if that's something you can talk about right now.
I mean, we're going to give him every opportunity to grab that spot. Yeah, I mean, he's an elite defender and somebody that we think highly of, so that he would probably be the guy in the lead, yeah.
What does it take to play center field at Kauffman Stadium?
Elite jumps, routes. I mean, it's, you're asking because it's huge, you know, and that's what you need. You need somebody that can really run, somebody that can cover a lot of ground, and more so than anything, get good jumps on the ball so that they're in the right spot.
You have options there, right? I mean, I think you like the athleticism of a lot of your young outfielders.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, there's guys. That's why I'm saying, you know, it could be people that aren't necessarily outfielders, too. You know, we've got a lot of good multi-purpose guys that play the infield and the outfield.
Maybe the center field option for you guys?
I would think we'll put him out there some. I mean, the way I view him is he can play everywhere. So we'll see where he's most comfortable. At some point, you want to be fair to him, too, and put him in the best spots for his success. So I'm not really sure how much that's in one corner, center, third, whatever it is.
If you couldn't hear that last name, that Andy Rogers was asking about Nate Eaton as
Got
the last
okay.
name, as an option. When they... you know, when they traded Michael A. Taylor and they talked to us about that, one of the reasons they felt they could trade him is they felt they had a lot of really good options. Now, I think their first option was Drew Waters.
Yeah.
Now, 6 weeks is a pretty long time. So that, I mean, you're talking about that's opening day.
Yeah.
Is in danger at that point. I saw Drew in the clubhouse today. He's not like walking around hurt. Mm-hmm. But I think you're going to be extra cautious because we've seen how obliques go with baseball players.
Yeah.
If you aggravate it, it can really be a long time. So this is very disappointing for Drew to have this oblique injury right now, because this was a big opportunity for him. You know, they traded for him, this, if you can recall, this is the player who was a big hot prospect for the Braves, mm-hmm. who the Royals actually traded a draft pick for last year. And he got to the major leagues, and he had some highlight moments. He's a pretty good player, very athletic guy, and I think this was going to be a huge opportunity when they traded Michael A. Taylor away, that he could be someone who could step in and realize his dreams of being a major leaguer and really take control of his situation in center field. But it's tough for him to have that happen. So I guess that's the bad news of what's happened at camp so far.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, 6 weeks is a long time. And also, I think you just answered this preemptively, but I'm circling back to make sure, not because I didn't listen the first time, but Drew Waters would have been the Royals' first choice to win that job, right? If you said someone just outright wins it, they're the starter opening day, that's the highest upside of the guys, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think he was, I mean, they really do like Isbell, too. They think he can play in the outfield. He got little chances here and there at different mm-hmm. spots last year, but not much in center. So, but I do think Drew Waters looks like a center fielder, right? He's
yeah.
a little taller, a little lankier. Isbell's a little bit shorter. He may be more of a right fielder, but he'll get his chance now. This is a great opportunity for him. You know, that baseball's about opportunity.
Sure.
If you get your chance to go out and play a bunch, then you can. I still think of Nicky Lopez, who basically had been told, you're done, right? You're not going to get to play. And then Adalberto Mondesi might have been an oblique. Could have been a shoulder. Can't remember.
Yeah.
It's tough to keep all the Mondesi things together. And then Nicky Lopez got a chance, and he turned into a major leaguer.
Yep.
Like, not just a guy who got up every once in a while. So it's a big opportunity for Isbell at this point, I think.
Are there any other battles to this point that you are finding interesting, or I'm genuinely trying to kind of go through and figure out, you know, what's up in the air for a team that has so much kind of in transition? But I don't know if there's necessarily a training camp style positional battle that jumps to mind.
Well, there's lots of spots in the bullpen, obviously, and who's sure. going to be in the rotation. And Quatraro won't really give us much on that. I mean, it's so early. They're going to start playing games on Friday, and we'll see that a little bit more. But that's when you're the Royals, and there's nothing really set you. Bobby Witt is set, okay?
Right.
Salvador Perez is set. You know, Vinny Pasquantino probably feels like he's the first baseman, but what if Nick Prado has some amazing spring? You know what
sure.
I mean? I mean, there's a lot of options there. Hunter Dozier is going to get a chance to play third base more than in the outfield right now. They've told him that. He's going to be like a third base guy. We're going to hear from MJ Melendez here in a second. We'll talk about him, but... He's a catcher, but, you know, Salvador Perez is a catcher
yep.
on this team, and he's under contract. He's got a closet of gold gloves. So MJ Melendez is going to play in the corner outfields, too. I mean, he's going to do all those things. So there's not a whole lot set here with this team, which is, I guess, exciting and scary at the same time.
Yeah.
Because they're just in a real transitional phase trying to get these young players in. We saw it after the trade deadline last year when all the young guys came up. And even probably actually before the trade deadline, really we saw a lot of this in that Toronto series when a
yeah.
bunch of the team couldn't make the trip because of the vaccination policy.
Yeah.
And you know, lots of people are like, I'll watch these guys play. You know, so
yeah.
here's the deal. You're going to watch these guys play now.
Yeah.
You got your wish. You're going to watch these guys play now.
It's funny. Yeah, because I going through and trying to think of, like, battles is a little bit of a different feeling than it just kind of being fluid. Like, there's not a lot set in stone, but I don't know if that is a measure of, yeah, a lot of guys just have to prove some stuff still, as opposed to like, oh man, look at all these head-to-head, all these guys could start for 20 other teams. But it really is just, what I guess, a matter of figuring out who your building blocks are still, because I don't know how you manage expectations in the first year of a new administration with all these young guys and everything, but it does sort of feel like that to me. Like, this is about figuring out who's foundational and figuring out who's replaceable.
Well, it's a good time to have a regular spring training for this group, too.
True.
Because, you know, last year, the lockout and all that, it's a really good time to have some games and lots of games. They'll take all the split squad games they can get, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'll play every day to find out what these guys are all about. I mean, you know, this is just me being in general terms. I like Nicky Lopez. I think he's, like I said, sees his opportunity and turn into a major leaguer.
Mm-hmm.
But the Royals would probably be a better team if Michael Massey proved to be an everyday second baseman.
Sure.
That would probably be a better upside for them. You know, in a perfect world, like, Vinny Pasquantino is your first baseman, Michael Massey's your second baseman, Bobby Witt is playing short. Let's say Hunter Dozier finds a spark
mm-hmm.
from a couple of years ago and plays well, and Nicky Lopez is utility guy. That'd be great
right.
for them.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, it's tough. Baseball's tough. There's no question about that.
Well, you mentioned that we could hear from MJ Melendez in your conversation with him. I'd love to do that because I'm very curious about where he's going to fit into to this roster. Obviously, a spot is a big part of it, but where exactly is that going to be defensively? How are they going to use him? And anything else we need to know from your guys' conversation here?
Yeah, we'll get into that about in the middle of it. And, you know, listen, here's the deal. If MJ Melendez hits, he's going to be on the Major League Baseball team.
Yep.
They'll find somewhere because he's a good hitter.
Yep.
So that's the most important thing. He's got to be able to hit. Listen, I think he'd like to be a catcher. You'll hear me ask him that question. He doesn't flat out say, yeah, I only want to be a catcher. But I think he'd rather be a catcher if he could get that part of it done. But I started the conversation basically just about, listen, you've got a camp. You've got a brand new manager and a lot of different changes around camp right now.
It's definitely different. I don't know if I could say a lot different, as we've only had like one full day of, you know, everybody here. I've been here for a couple weeks now, but it's a good feeling. I mean, being back here with all the guys, you know, coming into camp, having spent some time in the major leagues last year, definitely coming in with a new mindset and just kind of hungry and ready to get after it.
A lot of fans want to know about these, like, new rule changes, right? Which one of these rule changes do you think would be the thing that Major League fans notice the most?
Probably the pitch clock, pitch timer, just like the speed of the game. I know that we've talked about it, especially like we had a lot of day games last year that, you know, were really long. Night games kind of on and off just depends, but I feel like just being able to speed up the game and, you know, have fans be more interactive in them.
How big is the adjustment period for guys who maybe haven't dealt with that, who've just been in the majors long enough to where they didn't have
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the thing that I think a lot of people notice and that we're kind of eager to see is, like, guys that, you know, for us on our team, like Salvi, that has been in the league for a long time and, you know, is not used to anything like that. You know, guys on other teams that, you know, you got guys like Mike Trout, you know, pitchers like Justin Verlander or Max Scherzer, all those guys that have been in the league for years and years. That's like, okay, let's see how, you know, these new rules kind of affect them.
I mean, maybe don't want to be the umpire that calls a ball on Max Scherzer if he didn't throw the ball in time. That may not go great, huh?
No, exactly. 100% that. And then, like, imagine, you know, like, having to call a strike on Salvi because he's not ready in the box. Like, that's just something that a lot of those umpires, especially the umpires that are, you know, have been in the game for a long time, that they are probably, you know, going to take some adjusting and see how they handle it as well.
So where are you right now? I mean, you're going to catch, you're going to play some left field, right? What have they kind of told you about
it? Yeah, I think, like, catch, corner outfield, whether it be right field or left field, kind of both. And just, you know, doing whatever is needed of me that day. And obviously, you know, Salvi's going to catch, and then, you know, whenever he's not catching, I would assume I would probably be back there.
You know, there's some been some talk outside about, like, pitch framing and stuff like that on catching. Is there a new emphasis on that here? And some
ideas? It's been really, really good, actually. I feel like I've made a lot of progress. I feel my frame has been the best as it's ever been right now. I feel like I'm able to really dominate, you know, the zone with my receiving right now, and something that Paul Hoover has done a really good job with me and Salvi so far, and just helping us kind of, you know, get better. Something that we for me was like weakness last year, and I feel like it's starting to become a strength behind the plate.
I mean, like, your goal, like, 5 years from now, you want to be a catcher, you want to be an outfielder? I mean, where's your heart still, I guess?
It just depends, honestly. I just, you know, go out there and want to play ball every single day, and kind of whatever happens, happens, and just got to be the best player I can, really. Just, I don't really think about it too much right now.
So what about your you know, this group of young guys, right? You were up here last year, and especially at the end of the year after the trade deadline, the group was really young, so you guys have got some time together. What do you feel like you guys can achieve this year? And maybe got a little head started on last year with some of the, you know, time at the end of the year.
Yeah, just having a fresh start, just going out there being ourselves, and out there trying to win ball games. I think last year when a lot of the guys came up, you know, we already, you know, didn't have the best record, didn't have, you know, any momentum kind of going with us. I think this year starting for us, and having the guys that are vets this year, you know, really pushed us to be better, and are really encouraging us to kind of just go out there and be ourselves. I feel like it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun to kind of, you know, be at the field and have that dynamic.
The expectations outside this club, when you look around at the projections and stuff, aren't high. Where do you guys have your expectations?
I think we can definitely probably perform much above those. And, you know, we don't really look for those things, but I think just going out there and try to win every single game, obviously. And we don't really look at it as like we're just like a young team that's like in the future. We feel like we're ready and we're able to compete right now. And, you know, even though most people may not see that, we believe in ourselves. And I feel like that'll kind of show itself in due time.
And we're a long way before the opening of the season, but like, how important will it to be to kind of get some positive reinforcement early on that front? Like, win some games early and kind of not get.
Yeah, I mean, it's always important to get off to a great start. I mean, I think you've seen it in the past where teams get off to a good start and then just, you know, don't end up finishing off well, or they, you know, get off to a poor start and they end up finishing off well. So it's not an end all be all, but I think it is always great to kind of have that first, you know, those first couple games, just get off to a really good start and start the season off on the right foot.
That's MJ Melendez, Royals catcher slash outfielder, down here in a surprise at spring training. We're brought to you down here by Walk-Off Wood Bat Company in St. Joseph, Missouri, where every bat is meticulously crafted to the highest of standards. Learn more about their elite-level customized bats at wowbats.com. Josh, the interesting stuff there in the middle about the time, the pitch clock,
yeah,
and all that stuff will be fascinating to watch early. I can't wait to see someone call a strike on a batter or a ball on a pitcher for not doing what they're supposed to do in time. It'll be wild.
Yeah, that is exactly where I was going to go, because we haven't really talked about that very much on this show yet, and I imagine it will become a major part of conversation. On the other side, I saw a picture of the new bases next to the old bases, and if I didn't see them side by side, I never would have noticed.
Yeah, probably not. It'll be a difference. You know, baseball's a game of inches.
Well, sure.
Right? So every bit counts there. And it'll probably make stolen bases. I mean, you're talking about half a foot less to run. So that all matters somewhere. But the thing I am going to be, like, probably really looking at a lot will be the clock.
Yes.
And staying in the box and, you know, you were always supposed to stay in the box for the last, I don't know how many years, unless there was a foul ball or a ball was put into play somehow. But people just didn't do it. They're going to have to now, you know, because when they – I was talking to a couple other guys, like you hit a – like say you hit a pop-up or something and it's going out of play, and, you know, they'll start that clock when the umpire throws the ball. The umpire may throw the ball back to the pitcher before that thing hits the ground, you know, or hits a fan out there somewhere. So you better have yourself ready. But they're going to work on a lot. I mean, spring training is important for this part of it. They'll be doing all those things, but I'm fascinated to see how that works. And, you know, some of these guys, I always think pitchers work, when they're working fast, it's usually better.
Yeah.
And it's when they start thinking too much, it's bad for them. And if you're working slow and you get a ball called on you, it's going to, some of these guys who maybe aren't as mentally strong as they should be will probably unravel before your eyes. It'll be amazing. So I'm excited about it. But the data is, minor league baseball games were 22 minutes faster last year with these pitch clock rules. Because, and listen, it's the same number of pitches and things happening.
That's right.
Squeeze it in and make it faster.
Right. You know? It's not, hey, we're cutting two innings off the end of the game to get you home 20 minutes earlier. It's just that standing around Nomar Garcia Parra time, you know, the patron saint of adjusting his batting gloves.
Oh, I loved Lorenzo Cain, but he was in the same deal, man. He got out every time. And, you know, I think Salvi is going to be one to watch. He's been a batting glove guy, too. A little adjusting and stuff
like
that.
Wasn't Omar Infante a big batting glove guy, too? I seem to remember one being egregious.
Omar. They would, and sometimes, you know, you'd seen guys recently, they would keep one foot in and the other foot out and then, like, adjust their gloves. I don't think that's going to work anymore.
You
keep your feet on the ground in there, and the pitchers are going to have to, you know, and, you know, last year, remember they started this thing with the little pitch calling things, the little wristband and the thing in your head to try to kind of quicken this stuff up so you're not going through signs 75 times and the Astros cheat on you.
Right.
So they're doing things to make the game go quicker. It's pace of play. It's like you said, it's not making the game 8 innings or 6 innings. It's making it go quicker and you get more action while you're there. So it'll be fun to watch for sure.
Hearing Ned Yost be generally positive about all of the changes was really whenever I realized that we are truly in a new time. So, have you gotten a feel down
Ned's
there?
Ned's positive because he's retired.
That's true, right? It's not his
Ned's
baseball anymore.
He would have been different.
That's been probably different.
The feel I've gotten, you know, the word that Matt Quatraro said yesterday, it's going to be chaos. Okay, because there's going to be a lot of stuff. But most of that chaos will be in spring training, I think. But, you know, for the Royals, a lot of these guys have already done this because they're coming up from the minor leagues. It's the guys who have been around for a long time who have never had any of these rules in place. They'll be the ones that have the bigger adjustment. They'll have to get themselves ready. But I think generally speaking, you know, I was talking to Vinny Pasquantino today. He's like, you know, we're down in the minor leagues. You're sitting there playing games and get done in 2.5 hours. It's great. You know, I mean, listen, these guys, their union sets rules on travel so they can get places and get there faster and have their bodies rested and all that stuff. You know what's better for that? Don't have a 4-hour and 5-minute 9-inning game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have a 2-hour and 30-minute 9-inning game, and then the union is behind these things. They'll say they aren't because no one wants to agree with management, but they should be behind these things. Get the thing done faster, you know? And I think that from what I've heard around the Royals, generally speaking, everyone is into this and is excited about it.
Yeah, and I think another element of it that goes back, and maybe this is a bit of a straw man at this point, and maybe we can just blow away the straw man with the leaf blower in the background, is this idea that, like...
It happens, buddy. We're
it just happens.
Here.
It's look, no, I know, man. You are on site right now at spring training. It's beautiful. It's the sights and sounds. But it's not just like everyone's trying to get home half an hour earlier, but even I watched some XFL football this weekend because I have a football-based sickness, and it's the only way that I can, you know, stave that off. But, you know, not having commercial breaks between touchdowns and kickoffs and stuff like that keeps the product more visually entertaining. It keeps you engaged, which means more of that sport in your life. It's just less of that interlude time, and as we get away from that, I like you said, I think it's good for the players and the coaches who are traveling. It should be good for the TV product. It should be good for everybody's ability to cover it and watch it and enjoy it more, where you're not doping around on your phone, you know, between every single pitch. There was an old Pitching Ninja video that I saw yesterday of the entire Kentucky Derby between two Zach Greinke pitches at one point when he was in Arizona with the Diamondbacks. And then also there was a clip of him trying to ice a dude as soon as his second foot touched the batter's box and trying to keep it quick. Like, I just, we don't need a Kentucky Derby between pitches.
No, absolutely not. You don't. And there are pitchers who are responsible for that and batters.
Yep.
You know, it's everyone who's responsible. And the umpires are going to have to legislate this. And they'll have to enforce it strictly early, and that will train people and to do the right thing. And then eventually, how often did you think about that wristband and thing in the hat after the first 4 days they did it? You didn't think about it at all.
No.
And you'll quit thinking about pitch clocks, and you'll quit thinking about bigger bases, and you'll quit thinking about the shift after a while. I mean, it'll just be baseball again. And I think that's what they want. They want it to just be crisp and quick and more palatable for all of those things you mentioned, the TV product, the fans at the stand, in the stands, everything. And I'm excited about it. Here's the thing. If things aren't going great, find a way to change it. Don't sit there and keep doing the same thing over and over again. And I'll credit baseball for trying something. Maybe not all the things will work. Maybe they'll take one of them away. I mean, they did the thing with the runner on second base, a few years ago, and they're going to keep that around. And more you talk to people, they like this, especially in the minor leagues, because they do not want to wear out their minor league pitchers on games that aren't major league games. And I think these things are working okay. And it's just, listen, the world changed. There used to not be a DH. Now everyone's got a DH.
Right.
Just deal with it. It's okay.
If it is anything like the NBA and trying to enforce some of their new rules that they do every once in a while, they'll do it very heavily to start the season.
Hmm.
And then by about midway through, it'll be back to normal.
Could be. It's hard to change this clock, though, man. This clock's going to be going, and you'll see it. It's in the scoreboard. I mean, there's a clock out there right now for the time between innings. I assume it'll be the same place at the K. You'll look up, and there's this pitch clock. And we were watching a college baseball game yesterday in Surprise. Oregon State plays games while we're out there. And they've had the pitch clock in college baseball for a while. You sit there and watch it. That clock goes. You better get your butt in the box, and he better throw the ball, man. That's how it goes.
Sure, because the NFL is really good about enforcing the timing on their play clock.
Yeah. You know what? We were sitting there. I was watching.
They might as well add negative seconds to that thing.
I don't know how long they took on the Kansas game last night, like 30 seconds to figure they're going to put 0.8 seconds back on or off the clock. They got to fix that stuff in other sports, but we'll see about this pitch clock. I'm excited about the changes. I think it'll be fun for fans, for sure.
I think both the NFL and Major League Baseball to solve this problem that Beards has shined a light on. We just need shot clock horns in the other sports also.
Yes.
I want to know if that ball is still in Max Scherzer's hand and it goes bomb, we all find out together that's a ball. Now, the first time the ball is in flight
and that happens,
he turns
around and throws it at the horn. Yeah.
Right.
He'll throw it at the horn.
And maybe,
umpire.
If you successfully plug the horn with a thrown baseball, then the pitch clock
game
is
over. You win.
You win.
There's pace of play.
It's like
game
a golden
over.
Snitch kind of thing. You have the golden snitch.
The game's
game. Over. You win. I like that a lot. Lebo,
everyone goes home. It's first inning. Whatever, man. Finish.
Yeah, that's the ball game. Sorry, we'll do a doubleheader and get a few more of these in here. And all of a sudden, Max Scherzer's got like 100 wins in a season. He's setting new records. Give us a look at what's coming up in the program today, what Seren's going to have on the schedule, and then what else we're going to hear from you guys down there in Surprise.
Well, we've had a chance to talk and set up a lot of interviews. I don't know exactly what's going to be on all day today. Matt Quattraro was yesterday. I know we're going to catch up with J.J. Piccolo. I think that's going to be tomorrow. Lots of fun stuff. You heard MJ Melendez talk about Paul Hoover. I know he's going to be on at some point. That's a name of this guy who's kind of like their kind of catching guru guy. Mm-hmm. Super interesting guy. It's been good. It's been really fun to talk to a lot of these guys because they're all brand new and they're all willing to kind of talk. And I'm going to suggest this with the people. I know yesterday, if you're a pitching person and loves all of the stuff that goes into it, Paul Gibson, who's their minor league roving pitching instructor, was excellent. He was on in that 2 o'clock hour. Really good if you're one of these guys who loves baseball prospects and to hear all that stuff. He was really interesting to talk to. So it's really cool to talk to these guys. They're excited about having these jobs, and they're excited about the team. And it's spring. Hope spring's eternal. That's always been the thing. Everyone's 0-0 right now. And we'll just see. The only bad news today, Drew Waters is hurt, because I was really excited for him to get his chance. But You know, that's the way it works, man. No one stays healthy all the time. Now we're really at spring training. The Jets are going over.
I mean, yeah. Are you? That's, are they in
your
air space?
We're by the Air Force Base, yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's always near the Air Force Base here, and we were here Sunday, and nothing was happening, and yesterday was President's Day. So now we got the Jets, baby. It's really spring training in Surprise, Arizona. Love it.
Couldn't think of a better note to end it on. Thank you, Lebo.
All right, talk to you guys soon.
Todd Lebo, live from Surprise. We got the leaf blowers. We got the Jets overhead. We've got hope springing eternal. And also Drew Waters is out for like 6 weeks. But hey, you know, that's the one piece of bad news today. It's mostly looking pretty good out there in Surprise. We'll take a break here on The Zone here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Josh Briscoe and Beards McFly with you as Jason Anderson's out. And I hope to have him back soon. We'll take a little time out and come back and we'll spin the wheel of topics. We'll pick something else to chat about before we hand it over to Seren Petro, also there live from Surprise in about half an hour. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Oh, no. His measurables.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hey, Beards, help me out real quick on this. I'm down here. I sat back down. I forgot to turn the video feed. Standing energy all through last segment in solidarity with Todd Lebo joining us live from Surprise. Did we talk about the Tyreek Hill tweet?
No.
Okay, let's do that.
We haven't talked about any of that today.
Partially because it's no longer even news when LeSean McCoy goes on TV and bleep talks Eric Bieniemy. And to be honest, I did not even watch the actual clip of him being on FS1 for whichever show it was. It wasn't... I don't think it wasn't the good one. So,
is there a good one?
Yeah, I think so, but we could save that conversation for another day. LeSean McCoy goes on FS1 and talks about how actually Eric Bieniemy is not all that. Don't give him any of the credit. He's just a passenger, blah, 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 blah. And there are a handful of guys who have chimed in on this. There was one before Tyreek Hill that I thought was funny. Do you remember who it was, Beards?
Jamal Charles tweeted
about it. Yeah, yeah.
Ron Parker tweeted about it.
Ron Parker also did. Those are both good polls, Beards. Thank you.
I would have said Rob Parker. That's somebody different.
That's a different person entirely.
Right. They also work for Fox Sports, I think.
I at least did at some point. But yeah, Ron Parker, former chief safety, who I just have a lot of fond memories of. He was a fun player. Fun free safety type. I liked him back there. He tweeted about it, and then Jamal tweeted about it, which I've told the story many times. I think I mentioned it yesterday of talking to Jamal a year or two ago and going through the whole process of how he at one point stormed into Andy Reid's office and told him he needed to fire Eric Bieniemy. And now he's out here on Twitter defending Bieniemy in front of the world, and they continue to stay in touch, and he calls him a great father and husband and all of those things that, you know, you go and show exactly how far your relationship has come. Jamal being a guy out here saying that when Bieniemy was the running backs coach at that point, obviously, that should be the end of the conversation. Jamal Charles started that relationship in a rocky fashion, and now, from everything we can tell, those guys love each other. I asked Bieniemy about that story whenever that was, and I talked to Jamal and I went and asked Bieniemy about that, and he had similar things to say about Jamal Charles. So that I like retelling that story because that full circle of their relationship is very cool to me. And I obviously have lots of love and respect for Jamal Charles, and Chiefs fans I think have learned to find their love and respect for Eric Bieniemy as he's become a bigger and bigger part of this team. All that to say, the one tweet that really cleared the bar for me today was from none other than Tyreek Hill, who originally quote tweeted that clip with just a couple of laughing emoji, and then later tweeted, "Shady Mad EB told him tuck that ball." And it's the funniest possible thing. It's a great awareness by Tyreek Hill. Because LeSean McCoy holds that thing like a hoagie. And everyone can tell. Everyone can tell. Andy Reid had LeSean McCoy back in Philadelphia. I don't think Andy Reid wanted to, or frankly needed to be the guy to break the bad news to LeSean McCoy. really seems like it was Eric Bieniemy who said, hey, man, you're just not that guy anymore. Sorry. And then maybe some other, you know, coaching elements or particularly the tone. Who I don't know any of this. This is not me, like, kind of, you know, backdoor reporting and being like, maybe they had an altercation. I don't know any of that. No idea. But clearly that relationship was prickly in a way that it wasn't for other guys, to the point that Tyreek Hill just says, Shady's mad EB told him to tuck that ball. I find that hilarious. I also think it's kind of interesting that since the most accurate quarterback to ever throw me a football conversation and the stat repressing and all of the things that came with what didn't particularly need to be said before this last football season began, not including that, after all of that went down, the relationship between Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs and Chiefs players and Tyreek Hill has been very amicable. Which, again, I think is another sign of just, like, you know, a competent, good organization who's paying attention and generally tries to handle things well.
Also, winning a Super Bowl helps.
Certainly does. But, like, throughout the playoffs, Tyreek was tweeting about, you know, Mahomes and Kelsey being the greatest duo of all time and still rooting for these guys and these being his teammates and all of that. And there was a great point, I think it was made by Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter, who said, you know, in all of this, like, trash talk, nobody believed in us stuff that the Chiefs have been going through, none of them have ever said anything about how, you know, some people who used to play here didn't even think Patrick Mahomes was accurate enough to win another Super Bowl. There were no, like, that didn't happen. And Golic's point was they must really, like, legit love Tyreek Hill, because that'd be a really easy rallying cry to add to nobody believed in us. It's, oh, a guy that we had a Super Bowl with here, he left and started bleep talking. And nobody did that to Hill. And outside of, you know, some of that stuff early on of, I think, him trying to get on the right foot with his quarterback and then some podcast teasers that were not cut in very smart/generous fashion, for my estimation.
On purpose, maybe?
Definitely on purpose, but I don't necessarily want to blame Hill individually for that, because I'm guessing he wasn't out there in Adobe Premiere, you know, cutting his own teasers. Maybe he was. If I had Tyreek Hill money, I would be paying someone else to do that for me. Maybe his passion's video editing. I don't know. But I just thought that tweet was funny. It really puts a bow on a very, very silly little revenge tour for LeSean McCoy, who's probably going to just chase around Eric Bieniemy, booing him from a few rows back for a while. And maybe he'll end up having, maybe Bieniemy will end up having success and maybe not. But either way, it seems like LeSean McCoy has found a way to say the thing that gets some traction. And then former Chiefs players come out in droves and say, that's a dumb thing that a guy said, because his career essentially ended with Eric Bieniemy potentially being the bearer of bad news that he didn't have the juice to be that guy anymore. Just a fun little snapshot into things going on right now on Chiefs Twitter. We didn't need to take another quick timeout, though, because we spent some time with Lebo live from Surprise. Again, Seren Petro will be live from Arizona starting at 2 o'clock. But we got about 10 minutes left of the zone, so don't you go anywhere waiting on the program. You just stay right here. We'll try to entertain you for a few more minutes, and then the baseball talk can rule the day again. I have another clip from another current Chief, and also Mike Golic Jr. I didn't plan all that connection, but sometimes it just works out that way. We'll play that for you next.
You're in the zone.
This isn't exactly how I phrase it, but this is the more concise way for me to be saying this. This show's better when I prepare more.
With Jason Anderson.
Duh?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Beards, I guess I could have asked for this during the break and not had you jump for it, but can I get the breaking news sweeper whenever you just find it most appropriate? Thank you, Beards. Breaking news. During the break, Josh Gordon quote tweeted Tyreek Hill, laughing emoji, high and tight through contact, finish, laughing emoji, yee-oh! It makes me really happy.
So it sounds
happy.
Like he agrees.
Yes. Yes. And this is the crazy thing is that LeSean McCoy is like the only player who I've seen or heard from who has left Kansas City and been like, bleep Eric Bieniemy, man. Which also should be really, really telling about the head coaching acumen that he has clearly earned the right to at least try out. Like, that to me makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Mike's hot over there, Beard, so you and Adam and whatever your conversation is.
We're good.
All right, just wanted to make sure that you knew.
I didn't, but thank you.
That's all right. That's okay. I wish Adam wouldn't have used so much profanity in there, but, you know, once it's out over the air, it's out over the air. With that being said, a real quick tidbit here. I just saw this come through my Twitter timeline a minute ago, and Mike Golic Jr. and the Gojo Show had Trey Smith on, and this is just a little tidbit. I'm guessing there's a lot more conversation with them, so an accidental promo for the Gojo Show. I like Golic's work, and I like Trey Smith a lot, but this is a little snippet from Mike Golic Jr. and Trey Smith talking about how Trey Smith earned the enforcer role that he found as a member of this Chiefs offensive line.
How did you kind of find yourself in that role of enforcer?
So for me, it's just like, man, I relish in the fact that I can put someone on their neck 10 yards down the field or mollywop somebody coming down in a trap. Like, that's what I live for, you know, being able to physically just, you know, assault a guy, basically. So it's definitely a ton of fun when you have that feeling. You get a dominating block, or, you know, you get a pancake block, you're rolling, or you drive someone on their back right in front of your sideline. That's like one of the best feelings of football. It doesn't get better than that.
Oh, I'm getting fired up just listening to you talk about it.
I mean, it's how good is that? I want you to take that mollywop energy throughout the rest of your day here today, Kansas City. That. And this is another really, like, underrated part of a Super Bowl-winning team in your city. I looked up. I saw Trent McDuffie on NFL Network on a screen in here earlier. And it's not the first. I mean, there are guys who are not getting, you know, they're at the podium plenty around here, but it's different environments to sit down for a one-on-one with a podcast and with a, you know, former O-lineman who can talk to you about some of the nitty-gritty stuff like that, or to be on NFL Network and be able to even put yourself out there a little more in this offseason. It is another aspect of being a Super Bowl champion, and like Trent McDuffie's case, no longer a rookie. These guys who are getting the experience of both going through the season, having the spotlight on them, dealing with that through an entire offseason, all of that is fun and maybe even helpful in its own right. But I just like hearing Trey Smith talk about how he lives to mollywop dudes on the football field. Mollywop, such a good word. I would like to incorporate that a little more in today's vernacular.
I just want pancakes now.
I'm still trying to find a big plate of whatever Teicher said he had in Arizona. I've since closed the tab because of like a self-preservation method. Because if I would have been thinking about that for the entire show, I don't know that I would have made it. Pancakes do sound pretty good though. Appreciate everybody for being a part of the shenanigans today. Adam Teicher of ESPN, Myron Metcalf of ESPN, our own Todd Lebo out in Arizona. Thanks, Beards, on the side of the glass. I'm Josh Abrisco. Hope to have Jason Anderson back tomorrow. Literally day to day. It could be. We're just going to see how it goes. We're just going to see how it goes literally day to day. Seren Petro, literally today in Surprise, Arizona. Program next. Bye, Mom.